This is Open to Hope Radio, featuring Dr. Gloria Horsley and her daughter, Dr. Heidi Horsley, coming to you on behalf of the Open to Hope Foundation, dedicated to those who are looking for hope after loss. Now, here's Dr. Gloria.
Welcome to the Open to Hope Show. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Well, good morning, Heidi, and in California anyway. Pretty hot in New York and smelly, right?
Yep, because it's August, so it's very hot. But you know what? I can handle the heat better than February, I've got to tell you. The hardest months in New York are February and August.
Yeah, you guys had a terrible winter this year. Wow, around Christmas time and stuff.
And around February, you really wished it was August.
That's a good point. Well, Heidi, we've got a great show today because we're going to talk about grieving dads. And, you know, that's always a big issue for us, men in grief and how to help men with their losses. And we really get so impressed when there are men who step up and step forward and talk about their grief because I think it's sorely needed, don't you?
Absolutely. And the thing about our guest today, and I will introduce him, his name is Kelly Farley, is that he's lost not only one child but two. And so he's really been there, and he can speak to what it's like to be, like, in the depths of hell and come back out and find hope. And, Mom, I first, as you know, met Kelly in December in Atlanta because he was speaking at a Compassionate Friends candlelighting, and he did an amazing job, and he really touched the audience, and he really knows how to connect with men because he's a regular guy who was given all the same messages that a lot of guys listening were given of, suck it up, big boys don't cry, etc. And he'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, and that reminds me of our friend Eric Kippel, who we wrote the book with, Real Men Do Cry, because Eric's another guy who was a quarterback for the Detroit Lions for 9 or 10 years, and his son died by suicide, and he talked a lot about his journey that he went through, and really an interesting book and an interesting story.
Totally, Mom. In fact, when I met Kelly, I said, oh my gosh, Kelly, you've got to meet Eric. You guys would totally hit it off. And like you said, Mom, there's so much overlap in the way that they were raised and the messages that they were given as guys. I was like, you guys have a lot in common. And the fact that they're out there right now on the front lines touching other men's lives and helping other men through their own journey. Kelly also established the Grieving Dads Project. And, as you know, Mom, he's co-sponsor of the Farley, is it Kluger or Kluger, Kelly?
It's Kluger.
Kluger. The Farley-Kluger Amendment to the Family Medical Leave Act of 1993, which will extend benefits to parents that experience the death of a child. And I love that. I think that is such a great initiative.
I was just going to say, I didn't even know there wasn't medical leave for that.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Kelly about that. So, Kelly, welcome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity of being here today.
It's great to have you on today, Kelly, and all the work you're doing and your blog. And Kelly writes for us, and we've got a couple of wonderful articles that he's written on opentohope.com, so you're going to want to go after the show and read some of Kelly's writing, and you can comment there, too. So, and he has his own blog. We'll talk about that a little bit after. But, Kelly, tell us a little bit about Katie Elizabeth and Noah James and about losing those two babies in an 18-month period.
Like Heidi was saying, I was raised in your typical Midwestern blue-collar town where you didn't really talk about what you were feeling. It's kind of frowned upon. I didn't have a whole lot of male role models in my life that taught me how to talk about your emotions. It was just something you just didn't talk about, and which is pretty much how I lived most of my life and tried to live it even after the death of my daughter, Katie, which I lost Katie early November of 2004. And, I took a couple weeks off from work, held my wife, and then I knew I had to get back at it, because that's what I was taught. And, I spent the next year and a half fighting a lot of emotions, that I wasn't familiar with. The grief, the depression, stuff I didn't believe that I actually had. And or was dealing with until my doctor kept telling me, you got depression, you're dealing with depression. I didn't believe it. I thought there was something physically wrong with me. And come to find out, he was right. It was depression. It was depression brought on by not dealing with what I was feeling as a result of losing Katie. About the time I realized that was depression I was dealing with, we had lost my son Noah. In June of 2006, 18 months later.
Wow.
And that loss put me in a complete tailspin. Both losses were a result of severe fetal anomalies.
And you went through in vitro and all that kind of thing, didn't you?
Yes. So extensive fertility treatment.
Yeah. So that's in and of itself a real journey, and you know, emotional, expensive. You know, the whole.
Well, and you just, I mean, speaking from someone that's been through in vitro, and I've been through in vitro as well, Kelly, you want these babies so bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like all of a sudden you accidentally got pregnant. I mean,
right.
You're trying so hard and jumping through so many hoops and tests and just a lot of stuff to get there. And so to get pregnant after that journey is so exciting because you guys have, you know, we've been through so much at that point.
Oh, yeah, the journey itself, just to fertility, is a difficult journey.
So, you know, one of the things that strikes me is you were saying that you went to the doctor and you were sure you were physically ill. You know, that shows you how grieving is a physical experience. It's a, you know, it's an incredible drain on the body and strain and that kind of thing. So Heidi and I were just talking to people about taking care of themselves and drinking water and getting sleep and getting some exercise and, you know, all those kinds of things because it is really physical. So what happened to you? How did you deal with it? When did you figure it out and what did you do? You just toughed out the first one and then the second time?
Pretty much. Yeah, the second time around, I really, even if I wanted to suppress it, it just wasn't going to happen. It pretty much had manifested itself to the point to where it needed to come out. And
what kind of symptoms did you have for our audience, for the guys out there?
Just, you know, I'd wake up. I had all kinds of symptoms. Physical symptoms I had, basically I had headaches, unexplained headaches. So I'd never had headaches in my life. I had weird physical anxiety attacks. I remember one time I was at the grocery store with my wife, and I was standing in one of the aisles, and I just, all of a sudden it just hit me, and I just started to weep. And I wasn't shedding tears. It was just a deep physical weep that it was just finally pushing itself out of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, and the panic kind of set in because it scared me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't able to control it. So I remember running out of the, not really running out of the store, but I remember I got out of the store in a hurry to try to get some fresh air. And it just pretty much at that point in time, it started to reveal itself in the psychological aspects. I remember the doctor putting me through a CT, a scan, brain scan, because I was convinced I had a tumor.
Mm-hmm.
I had headaches that would not let off. It's just, you know, I say crazy stuff like that, but at the time it felt like I was kind of losing my mind a little bit because I could not control this sadness that I had inside.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of went hand in hand with anxiety and the panic attacks. And I'd sit at my desk and weep. And I, as a matter of fact, after we lost Noah, I took 3 months off from work.
Mm-hmm.
I just called work and said, look, I can't, and I'm not coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if my job is there and I get back, great. If not, I'll worry about that then. But I had to take care of myself. So I spent the summer of 2006 with my wife, just healing together every day, trying to spend time together and talk about what we went through.
Now, was she working then or no?
Yeah, she was working.
Uh-huh.
Also, it kind of goes back to the whole Family Medical Leave Act. That time, she was able to take the time off for medical reasons. I had to actually convince her doctor that I needed to take time off to help her, because under the Family Medical Leave Act, you can actually take time off to assist a family member.
Oh, okay.
So that's how we went about doing it. And to be honest with you, the doctor did not want to sign off on it. It took a lot of convincing on my part to... pretty much got to the point where I just said, look, you're going to do this. I need to take the time off. And eventually he did sign off on it.
Uh-huh. Wow. So I think this is great that you're moving forward to helping other men. You know, Heidi, one of the things that comes up for me when he's telling us this story is that I think that a lot of men out there who maybe are having anxiety attacks or having these kinds of things don't recognize them as symptoms of grief and loss.
I totally agree with you. I mean, what he's describing, I've heard other people describe that their grief that way. It does. It makes you feel like you're going crazy. And like you said, Mom, grief can be a physical, we can react physically as well, and people don't realize that. They think it's just emotional. So to be aware that a lot of this is what Kelly's describing, if anyone else out there is having it, that might be normal grief. And I would, you know, so it sounds like you and your wife took this time off together. What's interesting too, Mom, is the idea that if you're pregnant, and you lose, you know, you lose babies, et cetera, that you're given time off to heal your body. But when we can't see things physically, people don't realize that, you know, Kelly was grieving just as much as his wife was. even though he wasn't the one that was pregnant.
Right, exactly. I mean,
doesn't matter. And the fact that men don't get a lot of support as much as women do, I think, after pregnancy losses. Do you agree with that, Kelly?
Yeah, that's one of the things that kind of triggered the whole Grieving Dads project, is the fact that I looked for a lot of things out there for support. Once I realized I needed some help, I started looking for help, and I wanted to look for help from a guy's perspective. You know, the counselor mm-hmm. I happened to go to, I remember I'd sit in her office, and I'd say, and it happened to be a female, I'd sit in her office, and I'd ask her point blank, am I going to survive this? Because I really didn't know if I was going to survive it. It was the pain was that intense. And it was the first time I'd ever experienced grief in my life. So that maybe that had something to do with it as well. But it was scary, and I really didn't know I was going to survive it. And then when I got out and looked for other guys that maybe have gone through it, there just wasn't much out there. And it just kind of gave me the idea of, like, you know, if I'm going through this, I know other men have to be going through this. I know other guys that I grew up with were raised the same way, and that is fight it. You know, rub some dirt on it, do whatever you can, but don't show your emotions. It's a sign of weakness.
Now talk about what you've done to reach out to men. It's such a great time with the internet, isn't it?
Unbelievable. Yeah, I started off with the grievingdads.com, just a website. And the idea behind it when I started out was I was going to write a book about not just my experience, but I wanted to go out and interview other men that have gone through the death of a child, regardless of the circumstances, and regardless of what their socioeconomic background is, whatever their religious background is. It didn't matter. I wanted everybody's perspective on this. And what triggered it was I'd actually hired a gentleman to do some work for me on the side. And long story short, come to find out, the guy lived at a local homeless shelter. And I got to talking with him. And I'd given him a quick ride to the bus stop, and he, before he got out, he said that he had lost a son in 1991, and he'd gotten out of the car, but that comment stayed with me for a couple of weeks, and it dawned on me, like, you know, did he end up where he's at as a result of not being able to cope with the death of his son in 1991? And that's what kind of triggered the project, and the last thing I want is men out there not having somewhere to go or someone to talk to or realize there's help out there. I never did find out if that was the case with him, but through this project I've met several homeless men that are where they are at because the death of a child.
Oh, wow. Now talk about the project.
Yeah, I love your website, Kelly, by the way. I'm looking at it right now. Grievingdads.com. Great pictures, and it's so moving.
You know, after I started traveling and interview a lot of these men, and I've traveled across the U.S., and I've heard from men, be honest with you, across the world that have found this project. So apparently it's not just a problem here in the United States. It's an issue in Europe and Canada and Australia, where I've heard from many of these men that are also dealing with what I had gone through and can relate. And you know, guys will send me an email like guys do and say, hey, you know, I'm not really sure if this story fits what you're looking for. But then it'll go on for, you know, 10 pages of text about how he's feeling and everything. So he obviously have something on his mind he needed to share, and I'm just glad that I've got that outlet for them to do that. And since then, I've created the blog that you can get to from the Grieving Dads website, and that blog is really the main focus of what I'm doing now. And it creates, I'm getting, the last couple of months, I've got over 2,500 hits a month, visitors a month.
That's
so
great.
I know it's reaching people. It's reaching a lot of people. And it's not just men. Actually, I hear from a lot of women, too, that say, thanks for having this. I'm going to share it with my husband.
I was going to say women love to try to fix the guys.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, tell me, if you had some advice for a guy out there who's just had a loss, what would be your most early advice for them if I've had a loss? I know somebody just got in touch with me about a guy who has just lost his second child. And, you know, I tried to reach out to him, but he didn't get back to me. I've emailed him. He's not getting back. And, you know, he has a right to his privacy and not get back. But how do you reach guys? I just find women a little more open to a phone call or whatever.
Yeah, With guys, it goes back to how we were raised to be the protector and to be the strong one. And unfortunately, we believe that crying or showing our emotions, and like I say in some of the workshops I do, there's a time and place to be strong. Coping with the death of a child is not one of those times, nor should anybody expect you to you know, be strong, I guess, as defined by society. And I would ask them to, you know, seek the help, whether it's getting the emotions out, speaking to a counselor or a support group, or whether it's just writing. Writing itself I found to be very therapeutic early on. I'd sit in my office and I'd just write letters to my children. And I'd sit there and I'd weep. And I'd just cry and tears falling and a box of Kleenex. And I can honestly say I never would have done that before. But it really does provide a cleansing. It helps get that anxiety that starts to build up and needs to be released. So even if you don't feel comfortable going to a counselor, try to find somebody, whether it's a close friend that's been through it, or a support group of other people that have gone through it. My wife and I are dear friends with others that we met in our support group, and we get together with them quite often.
Now, did you have a turning point, would you say, when you started to come through or, you know, see the light, or what was it? And have you had any spiritual experiences connected with all this?
Yes. To answer your first question, the turning point was really about 18 months after Katie, and I just couldn't fight it anymore, and then it started showing itself more physically, more anxiety, uncontrollable tears, weeping, and just almost to a point of convulsions. The weeping was so strong it was starting to come out, and I mentioned that earlier, but that was kind of the turning point for me, that I realized once I started talking about it, I started feeling better. I made a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And from a faith perspective, yes, I didn't turn to God right away. For me, after the loss of Noah, I actually found a men's group at a local church. It was an invite from somebody I had done business with. Says, you might want to check this out. It's for men that have gone through some difficult times. And I definitely wasn't the guy that's going to go on a weekend church retreat and talk about my feelings. But finally, I was convinced I should go to it. It wasn't like that. And it's probably one of the best decisions I could have made. The men in the group, they were dealing with all types of different life situations. It wasn't just the death of a child, even though I did connect with a gentleman in there that lost a baby as well. But it was probably one of the best decisions I could have made, just to realize I wasn't alone as a guy.
Right.
Right.
You know, room full of 30 guys starting to break down crying as they're telling a story. Okay, maybe I'm not alone in this. And I fought it, you know, of course everybody's in there trying to fight it off, but you start realizing, okay, there's other people out there walking around with some bad stuff.
Yeah, I notice I'm on the board of Compassionate Friends, and I notice that the guys on the board love to talk about football, and they're so intense about it. I think, you know, part of it is it's kind of a relief from the other side, you know, of the grief and loss, and you can get intense about, you know, and join together about something else.
Well, and it's okay to show emotions as long as it's related to sports.
Yeah. Well, Kelly, I want to talk a little bit about the Farley-Kluger Act amendment to the family medical leave. Is there something you want people to do about that? Is that on your site? How can we help with that?
Actually, from both the Grieving Dads website and from my blog, which is grievingdads.wordpress.com, you can get to the petition. And what we're asking, we launched this in early, actually mid-January of 2011. And within a couple of months, we'd gathered about 3,000 signatures.
Mm-hmm.
From bereaved parents. Not just bereaved parents, actually anybody that realizes this makes sense. The fact that you can take 12 weeks off after the birth of a child, or even after the adoption of a child, but after a child dies, it's not covered by the Family Medical Leave Act. And to us, it makes sense. I've talked to a lot of men over the last year that had to get back to work after 3 days of the bereavement leave was up. Some had a little bit of vacation time they could use, but after that, they were expected to get back to work. And if they didn't, it gave their employer the opportunity to release them.
Right.
Which is unfortunate, which I don't think is fair.
Well, Kelly, I think what you're doing is great, and I love all the things you're doing, and thank you so much for writing for us. And I want to tell people that you can go on Kelly's site, but you can also go on Open to Hope and comment on the articles that he's done. And Kelly, I'm sure we're going to have a lot more connection with you in the future, and I'm looking forward to doing that. And anything we can do to help you out with what you're doing, let us know.
Excellent. Thanks for having me here today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kelly, and I hope to see you at an upcoming conference at some point. It was great meeting you in Atlanta at Compassionate Friends. Thanks so much for all you're doing for men out there.
Well, Heidi, it's been a great show today, and Kelly's pretty amazing, isn't he? I'm glad you met him at the Compassionate Friends, and we've been able to have him on the show today.
He was awesome. He's so easy to connect with. Like I said, he's a real guy, and he's very easy to connect with, and he doesn't sugarcoat it. He tells it like it is, and I think that's really refreshing, and the guys that were there really connected with him. So he's doing so much in the world to help people that have had a loss.
And I hope everybody will go to our website and look at our new book that's just come out, our Open to Hope book, with the foreword by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and we've got about 108 pieces of writing of the best of Open to Hope, and I think it'll really help you on your journey of grief and loss.
And Kelly's one of them.
And Kelly's one of them, yes, absolutely. So make sure you get it, and tune in again next week.
You've been listening to Open to Hope Radio, hosted by Drs. Gloria and Heidi Horsley. Like today's edition, all of our past programs are available on demand at opentohope.com. Along with helpful articles, videos, resources, and links to help get you through the toughest time of your life. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Again, that's opentohope.com. Check it out today. Then be sure to stop by next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time when we'll be posting another edition of Open to Hope Radio. Remember, others have been where you are. They made it through, and you can too, as long as you're open to hope.